But I'm, more importantly, the organizer of this particular session, sponsored by the Committee on Affiliates, and partly out of personal interest, because I'm in public health and health education, but I'm also on the gerontology faculty at the University of Nebraska at Omaha, and I'm also at the leading edge of the baby boomers, born in 46, if you can't figure that out. Reverse that, 64, that's what I am right now. And I'll be turning 65 next year. Since I've been working in gerontology for a long time and public health for a long time, this is an initiative that's particularly interesting to me, and I hope to all of you. I've been involved in another World Health Organization initiative called Safe Communities, and the Omaha Metro Omaha area is one of the safe communities, and so I'm kind of familiar with the process of going through. And so partly Omaha is considering doing what these communities have done, and it'll be, and maybe some of your communities will be too. But in all my working with older adults, I mean, as a university professor, I give grades, I hold things over on them, because if they want to get a good grade, they have to do certain things. When I've worked with older adults, if they don't like what I'm doing, they leave. I don't say, well, you're not going to get a good grade. So you learn very quickly, you have to do things that are of interest to the people that you're working with, or they're not going to be there. And it always reminds me of another saying that is commonly used in public health, and that is, nothing about us without us. So it shouldn't be other people saying, what should we do for these older people, without engaging the older adults in the community. And of course, to my younger students, I say, if you want things to be good for your old age, you want to start changing them now so that they'll be good when you reach that part. So I'm happy to introduce this topic and our speakers today. And the way I'm going to deal with it is to introduce them all up front, and then but they will alternate. We have two people from New York and one from Portland. As you could see in the program, this is a World Health Organization initiative to look at environmental and social factors that contribute to active and healthy aging societies. And New York and Portland have achieved that designation, as well as two cities in Puerto Rico, Ponce and Mayagüez. And I don't know if there's any others yet or not, but you can, maybe you know. Like I said, Omaha is looking to do that. And so part of the thing that I've learned with being in the safe communities is that there's obviously a lot of work that goes into it. And so part of this is to say, well, what if we do bother to go to all this trouble, what is the process of doing it? Why should we do it? And how can it benefit basically the community, and particularly the for older adults as in particular. So our presentations today are first Dr. Margaret Neal, who is from Portland State University, the Institute on Aging, and she is director of the Institute on Aging and a professor of community health at Portland State. She teaches graduate courses in data collection methods and gerontology, and for the past several years she studied the challenges and opportunities of managing paid employment and informal care to elders, and how policymakers, employers, and individuals themselves can facilitate work-family integration. So she's been involved in this age-friendly cities for quite a while. She has her master's and doctoral degree in urban studies and specialization in gerontology, and her bachelor's degree in Spanish from Indiana University. Also with us is Tracy Pugh, who is from the New York Academy of Medicine, and my understanding is that they've led this initiative for age-friendly cities, and of course you'll be hearing more about it directly. And I just know that she's the person that I've been working with. Just to give you a little background, they've been very flexible because there was a mix-up about which day it was going to be, and so they all graciously agreed to switch when we had it originally set for another day. And that's the guy that made us switch right there. Yes, and that's I should plug that Urban Gardens, which is on Wednesday at 12:30. Is that right?
Right.
Yes.
Thank you, Dave.
Yes. And Carolyn Stem is also from the New York Academy of Medicine and a Fulbright recipient to Vienna, Austria. And she's going to pronounce the name of her diploma and her school. Has been with the New York Academy of Medicine in age-friendly New York City since March of 08, and has managed some of the data collection, the questionnaires, the created charts, and all of those things. And I believe they have a lot of their information on the back table there if you want to take a look at this. And has been active in many different ways as a committee member of Intergenerational Committee and encouraging senior citizens and school-aged children into understanding kind of intergenerational programs and interpersonal associations. So we have a lot of expertise here. I just should say a couple of things that I assume that there are options for continuing education. So those of you who know that, that are in those areas that are listed in the program, you know that you have to have the session number so that you can get those continuing education. So without further ado, Margaret Neal.
Well, I'm really happy to be here with you today. I haven't been to an APHA meeting before. I usually go to the Gerontological Society of America meetings and a bunch of others, but it's a real pleasure to get to rub elbows with all of you public health folks. I'm in a school of community health, but our institute is separate. Before I get started, I just would like to have a show of hands. How many of you what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask a question about sort of where you are on the continuum of thinking about age friendliness in your community. So how many of you would say you're doing it right now? Okay. And where are you from?
Toledo, Ohio.
Toledo, Ohio.
Toledo, Ohio.
I'm from HUD. We're doing it at the agency level.
Ah, great. And you are?
From Boston.
From Boston. And how many of you are, you know, making some strides, doing a few things, not quite there yet? Okay. And who's just sort of at the contemplation stage, just kind of thinking about it? Okay, great. Thank you very much. Okay. Down arrow is not working. There we go. Okay, I have no relationships to disclose. These are the learning objectives of this session. Identify what constitutes an age-friendly city and what the criteria are. Describe major components of age-friendly cities research and implementations in my city, Portland, Oregon, and indicate public health initiatives that have resulted from the age cities processes. First of all, what is an age-friendly city? It's a World Health Organization designation, and I would describe it as aspirational as opposed to actual. So the cities that have joined the network, have become part of the global network of age-friendly cities, are working on these efforts. But it would be a stretch to say, for example, that Portland, Oregon is an age-friendly city. What these are, they have several criteria. They're inclusive, accessible, and they're urban environments that promote active aging. They emphasize enablement as opposed to disablement, and they're friendly for all ages, not just age friendly. This is a diagram that shows the World Health Organization's framework of active aging, and in fact, it's the basis for their Age Friendly Cities program. So what is active aging? It's the process of optimizing opportunities for health, participation, and security in order to enhance quality of life as people age. And as you can see in the diagram, there are a number of different components: economic components, health and social service components, behavioral, personal determinants, our physical environment, and social determinants. All of those components interact to create a framework for active aging. The World Health Organization's Age-Friendly City Environments Program, it's housed within the WHO's Aging in the Life Course Program, and it is an international effort. It's intended to address both environmental and social factors that contribute to healthy and active aging in societies. The focus is on cities. I don't think that they're quite ready to embrace the idea of rural or smaller communities and age friendliness, but there's a lot of work going on across the world in this area of rural communities. And I would advise you to look at the Government of Canada. There are a lot of Canadian issues or Canadian organizations and cities that are looking at rural age friendliness. Here's some data about the rationale for the program. So in the year 2000, the global population age 60 and over was 600 million. In 2025, it doubles to 1.2 billion. In 2050, it's almost 2 billion. In 2006, 11% of the world's population was age 60 and over. By 2050, it doubles to 22%. And I'll add here that the bulk of that aging is occurring in developing countries that have little to no infrastructure for dealing with an aging population. Older people, as we all know, play crucial roles in our society. They can be paid or volunteer workers. They're transmitters of experience and knowledge and wisdom. They're family caregivers. But in order to make those contributions to society, they need to have good health, and they need to have their needs met and their contributions acknowledged. So the thinking of the World Health Organization, and this is a quote from their website, cities have more economic and social resources and can lead the way. Making cities age-friendly is one of the most effective policy approaches for responding to demographic aging. So this is the rationale behind the program. The original Age-Friendly Cities project was conducted in 2006-2007. It included 33 cities in 22 countries, plus two cities, including New York, that were in the process of going through the study protocol, but didn't quite have their findings yet. What the project involved was gathering baseline data on the features that make a city age-friendly, the barriers to age-friendliness in cities, and suggestions for increasing age-friendliness. The second component to the Age-Friendly Cities program is this new global network of age-friendly cities that just began in June of this year, and I'll talk more about that at the end of my presentation. This is a map depicting the 35 cities, so you can see that cities across the globe and on every continent are represented in this program. While you look at that, I'd like to also take a minute just to say that the Age-Friendly Cities is comparable in many ways to a number of other initiatives throughout the U.S. in particular that have been initiated, such as the Livable Communities from AARP, AdvantAge. There are a lot of similar efforts, and I don't think that what I would say personally is kind of no matter which program you line yourself up with, as long as you're addressing the basic goals of trying to make cities more accessible and more friendly and more respectful and more inclusive of older adults, then we're going to get to these goals of increasing age friendliness of communities, no matter what initiative you're following. The research study objectives for the World Health Organization, and this is a copy of their report that they produced, they wanted to produce a guide, and they did, to stimulate and guide advocacy, community development, and policy change in order to make urban communities more age-friendly. And they wanted to spend some time thinking about what are the concrete indicators of an age-friendly city. And that, too, I would say, is aspirational. at this point. I don't think they've really done that. And that's because these indicators need to be generated at the local level and need to be worked toward individually and in individual cities. There are some general areas that can guide the development of indicators, and I'll talk about those. Participating cities who were in the project, their goal was to increase awareness of needs and gaps in their local communities with respect to age friendliness, and to identify areas for improvement so that they could, in fact, become a more friendly urban setting. All of the cities that participated in the Age Friendly Cities project followed the same protocol. It's called the Vancouver Protocol. It is essentially a qualitative data collection effort and analysis effort, and this is the link for it. Quite honestly, if you just search on WHO Vancouver Protocol, you'll come up with this link. I did just a couple days ago, so that should still work. In each city, the protocol called for holding a minimum of 8 focus groups. 4 of those were to be conducted with older adults age 60 and over, with an emphasis on lower and middle income older adults. At least one group was to be held with informal caregivers to represent frail, disabled, cognitively and or cognitively impaired elders who couldn't speak for themselves. And then 3 groups were held with providers of service, one public, one private, and one in representing providers in the voluntary sector. These are the 8 areas that are the topic areas that were covered in the focus groups, which lasted 3 hours each, which is a really long time for focus groups, for any of you who have conducted focus groups. People hung in there, but it really took those 3 hours to cover all 4 of these areas, at least it did in our city. Outdoor spaces and buildings, transportation, housing, social participation, respect and social inclusion, civic participation and employment, community communication and information, and community support and health services. So they were asked in the focus groups, people were asked to describe what's age friendly in your city in each one of those areas by topic area, what constitutes barriers to age friendliness in each one of the in each of those 8 areas, and then what suggestions people had for change to improve the city in those areas. Why was Portland invited to participate? I believe it was somewhat serendipitous. We already had a relationship through our Institute on Aging with the Pan American Health Organization, so they knew who we were, they knew we could conduct the research, and that we could do it quickly. And we did it without funding, which we can't continue to do. As the director of a research organization, I have to say I can't do that again, but it was great, and we were glad to do it. This kind of work is consistent with Portland State's motto, which is let knowledge serve the city, and Portland has a reputation for good planning. Some people view it as almost a poster child for regional planning, growth management, and a variety of innovative urban planning policies. And yet, to date, prior to our work, little attention had been given to planning for an aging population. So this was really a great opportunity. In terms of framing the sample, the Vancouver Protocol said you should focus on a district or a neighborhood or a distinct neighborhood. And the example given in the protocol was Copacabana in Rio de Janeiro, which has a population of 350,000. So, wow, that is some neighborhood. So what we did in order to make a decision about what is going to constitute the sample frame for our study is we created a local advisory council composed of public business sector folks, aging services people, aging advocates, seniors themselves, to help us decide what tack we wanted to take. And so we thought, well, Portland has all these different geographic areas, 5 different areas, and well, we could focus on one of those. We could focus on downtown Portland. We could choose an urban renewal area where there's a lot of activity going on anyway and thinking about change, or maybe the entire city of Portland. And what we decided was to draw our sample for each of those 8 focus groups from the entire city of Portland. We did that because the timeline for this project was extremely fast. We needed to do convenience sampling, and we thought the broader the net we cast, the more people will get interested in participating. We also felt like the chance was greatest for impact at the local community level, because we knew that we wanted to be able to go back to the city and say, look, these are findings about the city of Portland. And so we did, we used that as one of our rationales. And then there was going to be international visibility associated with the project, and we thought that would be good for the city. So we chose people from across the city. We distributed flyers, we contacted 96 people individually, we had 55 participants total. So it's the findings from the study are based on a very small number of people. So what we want to do next, and I'll say this at the end again later, what we want to do is go neighborhood by neighborhood and focus on what neighborhoods think they ought to be working on in order to increase the age friendliness of their specific neighborhoods. And we met the various criteria otherwise for the study. Just in terms of selected findings, this is a general comment that an older adult made. Said, I can walk downtown in 20 minutes, but I have 187 stairs to go back home on. That's okay with me right now, it may not be later. I think that the community offers a lot of opportunities for social, medical, exercise, enjoying, volunteering, and also entertainment. So this is obviously somebody who's pretty happy with his situation right now, but recognizing that it could change as his physical health potentially declines. What I want to do is just highlight a few of the suggestions in each of the 8 topic areas that were made. And I'm going to have to be selective about some of these in the interest of time, so I'll just choose a couple bullet points to highlight in the oral presentation. With respect to respect and social inclusion, one of the suggestions from our focus groups was that let's think about the language we use to describe older adults. Let's use language like TriMet, which is our transportation provider, our public transportation provider. Let's use language like honored citizens rather than old people or elderly. And let's encourage more organizations and agencies to consult and actually listen to the advice of older adults. And let's educate people of all ages on the process of aging, because people don't get that in schools. We don't really know what to expect as we grow older. But let's not just focus on the declines that can occur, but also the contributions that older people can make. In terms of social participation, the suggestion was made that we let people know about all the opportunities for education that exist for older adults in Portland. For example, at Portland State, people age 65 and over can audit classes for free, and they love having that opportunity. And then also another suggestion was let's encourage physical activity among older adults and make communities more walkable and bikeable. In terms of communication and information, Multnomah County, which is the county that Portland's located in, has through its Aging and Disability Services Department, it has a helpline. And this is the phone number for it. And when people call it, they get a real live person. And that benefit, that aspect of age friendliness came up in every single one of our focus groups. They love that real live person. They also talked about the importance of having seniors teach other seniors how to use computers, because there's a recognition that this is the way that information is increasingly distributed. But they also said, don't just do electronic distribution of information, because as a community, older adults, or as an age group, not all older adults are there yet in terms of access to computers and computer literacy. So you really have to distribute information in a variety of ways. Civic participation, a key suggestion was, you know, we have this sort of usual group of suspects, older adults who are the advocates, and they go to all the meetings and they're very actively involved. Let's figure out a way to reach out to people who we haven't yet included as volunteers. People with lower incomes, people with less education, and people of diverse backgrounds. In terms of community support, Portland has a wide array of services for older adults. They're very threatened now in terms because of our economic environment. People wanted to make sure that they acknowledged the array of services that are out there in these focus groups and that they talked about increasing funding for those programs. And I don't think that's going to happen, not in today's economic environment. So we're going to have to be creative about how we get these services continued and increased to meet the needs of a growing older population. And I'll just highlight the last bullet point, reduce paperwork and bureaucracy. That's a way to increase efficiency, and that can save money. There was, of course, a lot of discussion about health services, and in fact, the Vancouver Protocol said, don't even go to health services until the last of the eight topics, because people will need to talk about this and want to talk about it. And of course, came up, we want healthcare for all, a universal healthcare system was the key suggestion. They also recognized a real shortage of physicians who are geriatricians, who know how to deal with an aging population, and other workforce issues with respect to dentists and other healthcare professionals. In housing, there were a lot of suggestions made, and like multi-generational housing, green spaces, allow pets, don't make people change any of the accessible improvements that they've made in their apartment, in other words, to put it back the way they came, which does seem kind of crazy, because we all benefit from those kinds of improvements. Do some education on older adults about how to age in place. In Portland, it is legal to actually construct an accessory dwelling unit, and that can both work for older adults who might want to move into one of these units that, for example, might be all universally designed, very age-friendly interior design, or they could rent that out as a means of staying in their own house. Very few people actually take advantage of that zoning right now. The issue of housing affordability came up in every focus group also. In terms of buildings, we have an organization called Elders in Action, and they actually created a program called the Elder-Friendly Business Certification Program. And what they do is they send volunteers of older adults to businesses and see what it's like to be a consumer in using that business, both in terms of the physical environment and how older people are treated. And you can find out information on this website, eldersinaction.org. People also talked about, I don't know whether this is true in other cities, but you drive down a street and you can't see a street address. It's really an easy fix. In terms of transportation, one of the key suggestions that came up among the groups of older adults was, we have light rail in Portland and a streetcar system, but the light rail, the original trains, not all of the cars were handicapped accessible. It couldn't roll onto all of them easily. They had one car, at least, that always was. The problem was, you never knew where that car was going to be. And so if you weren't situated in right the right place when the train pulled up, it would end up pulling away without your being able to get on that train. We got this fixed right away. We just called TriMet and said, you know what? You could fix this easily. Just put it in the same place. And they did. So that's one success. Another suggestion that one of our older adults made is, let's just give people a bus ticket. She says, I give them a bus ticket. I tell them to get on, ride the entire route, see what they could do, where they could get off. It's a very convenient bus as a means of helping people see that driving is not the only way. Outdoor spaces. Portland has a lot of parks. People loved the parks. They talked about other things that you could do to the parks to make them more accessible. Adding recreational features like chess and checkerboards and other kinds of activities. And just having places for people to sit and watch where they felt safe. Pedestrian infrastructure, lots of comments about this, crossing the street, having the crosswalk be long enough so that you could get across easily, having curb cuts, think about lighting, a variety of things in that way. So that's just some very quick highlights from the suggestions in each of those topic areas that people made. In terms of where we're at, how we've used the findings, initial implementation efforts, so to speak, we provided a summary of our findings in the report to the organizers of something called Vision PDX. That was a community-led initiative intended to create a vision for the city of Portland for the next 20 years. And we gave our testimony, we gave our written suggestions based on what we learned from the people who participated in our study. Oh, this is a copy of a summary of our report, and you can get it on our Institute on Aging website, pdx.edu/IOA. So we made those suggestions, we got them into the report, we joined a healthy aging work group so that we could work with service providers throughout the city to advise on the recommendations based in the Vision PDX report, and then a new mayor was elected. And the new mayor created his own version of the Vision PDX. He initiated the Portland Plan, which is overseen by the city's Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. The Portland Plan is a 3-year action plan preparatory to revising the city's 25-year strategic comprehensive plan. The goal of the plan is to make Portland a more thriving and sustainable city for all residents. And to help him in creating his plan, he created an advisory group. And because we were meeting with the mayor about the and his staff about the Global Age-Friendly Cities Network project that I'm just about to talk about, he invited us to join his advisory group. And basically our role as members of that advisory group, we go to a lot of meetings, and every meeting we say, what about older adults? What about older adults? Every single one. So it's beginning to sink in, but it's a slow process. The plan is supposed to be adopted in May, this spring. So the other piece of work that's part of the Age-Friendly Cities initiative in the World Health Organization is this thing called the Global Network. And it's intended to be a mechanism that will link cities, basically to ensure that the label, Age-Friendly Cities, reflects a common global understanding. The goals, they want to provide technical support and training through the network. They want to link cities like New York and Portland to the World Health Organization and to each other. The idea is to facilitate information exchange and best practices, and basically to ensure that interventions are in fact going to improve the lives of older people. To become a member, the city has to complete an application form and submit a letter from the mayor and the administration indicating their commitment to undertake a particular process that they call the Global Network of Age-Friendly Cities process. And essentially what they have to do is say, we're going to work on a 3-year implementation plan. I have a diagram of this. In years 1 to 2, we're going to work on an implementation plan which involves an action plan. It needs to involve older people in the creation of the action plan. You have to do a baseline assessment of age friendliness, which we've done as part of the original Age Friendly Cities project. And you need to begin to think about what are the indicators. How will you know whether you're making progress? In years 3 to 5, you're going to implement the action plan and you're going to monitor your indicators, and then you're going to evaluate your process. And this is a cycle, a continuous improvement cycle. The advantages of membership in the network are the visibility that it gives to the city if the city would use it, which in Portland's case they do not. but I'll talk a little bit about that. So you get to use this designation. You are connected globally, and that part is fabulous. So for example, I went to a meeting in Melbourne, Australia, the International Federation on Aging, and there was a group of people from the Age-Friendly Cities Network, and we learned how the Tourism Bureau in San Sebastian is using this designation to draw tourists into San Sebastian. So it's another thing to think about that the WHO hadn't really capitalized on yet. Am I okay time-wise? Okay. Great, perfect. So after the WHO created its network, it invited applications from cities to join it. And this is when we had gone to the mayor to talk about the Age-Friendly Cities Network. And we pointed out the synergies. Portland plans 3 years. The action plan for WHO is a 3-year project. We're going to develop indicators. We would write the application. We would do the work. We will do the indicators. We will gather the data that's necessary. We've already done a lot of it. And the mayor said, yes, great. His staff said, yes, great. And so we were accepted into the network, along with New York and the two other cities in Puerto Rico that that David mentioned. The steps here on the left are what the city had to do. They had to sign the letter. They need to make sure that they're establishing mechanisms to involve older adults in the process. As I said, the baseline assessment, the action plan, the indicator. What we're doing is we're coordinating the partnerships with the city. We're disseminating the findings from the baseline assessment. We are actually looking for funding to go neighborhood by neighborhood and work with neighborhood organizations to conduct their own assessments in their own communities, their own smaller areas than the whole city of Portland. We're going to assist in the development of action plan and the indicators and basically a consultant role. We have shared our findings with members of the City Council and other bureaus, including Department of Transportation, the Commission on Disability, Bureau of Housing, and as I mentioned, we're seeking funding to conduct that neighborhood level research. But there are some barriers. For one thing, in this transition from Vision PDX, from the old mayor to the new mayor and the Portland plan, there has been some frustration expressed on the part of citizens. Like, what happened to this? I think it was a 2-year effort where there was extensive outreach to communities to try and get their suggestions for what do they want Portland to be like in the next 20 years. And all of those recommendations are not automatically being incorporated into the Portland plan. So there's a political barrier here. The other thing that happens in the city of Portland is that there are some services that are offered by the city, some services that are offered by the county, and then there's the regional government, in our case Metro, which oversees all the transportation and long-term planning and comprehensive planning. So there are all these levels, and they don't always talk together, and they don't always make sure that their plans mesh with one another. And as everybody knows, there's a lack of government resources to actually address some of these issues. So even if you find ways, if we were to find ways to make cities more age-friendly, just thinking about the physical infrastructure needs, we're going to have to be very creative about finding the funding to actually address some of the problems that are identified. And there are a lot of different agendas. Stakeholders have different agendas. Our mayor is very interested in bike friendliness. Homelessness is an issue in Portland, economic development, education, and the opportunities and challenges created by an aging population are a priority, but they may not necessarily be the top priority of all those different stakeholders. So there are battles for whose priority gets to be addressed. And then our particular university government partnership model, it's an imperfect model. We can have the ideas, we can have the data, we can provide advice, but it's the government who has to implement the plan. And so we're still looking for the champion in the city of Portland, in the government. And I think it'll be the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. We've been working with a number of the staff there, and they're very excited about this work. But it's another kind of layer that has to be gone through. And with that, it's the conclusion of my presentation.
Good.
Thank you.